And welcome, everybody, to Midday. Glad to have you with us this afternoon. I'm Tom Hall here on 88.1 WIPR. Veterans Day is Friday. In a political season, candidates on both sides of the aisle make sure that we all know just how much they support our veterans and how much their opponents neglect our veterans. The fact of the matter is there are tens of thousands of veterans nationwide who struggle mightily each and every day. A little later in the program, we'll meet a remarkable guy who suffered a terrible battlefield injury and then rose to the top echelons of Paralympic athletes. Retired U.S. Navy Lieutenant Brad Snyder lost his eyesight in a bomb blast in Afghanistan. A year later, he won 2 gold medals in the London Paralympics, and last summer, he captured 3 gold medals at the Paralympic Games in Rio. His new book is called Fire in My Eyes, An American Warrior's Journey from Being Blinded on the Battlefield to Gold Medal Victory. Brad Snyder lives in Baltimore, and he'll join us here on Midday later in the show. It is an understatement to say that not all veterans are able to overcome adversity with the grace and grit of Lieutenant Snyder. On any given night, there are more than 39,000 veterans who are homeless. Veterans comprise 11% of the total homeless population in the United States. Many suffer from mental illness and struggle with substance abuse. The promises and pledges of politicians aside, there is an organization in Baltimore that has been helping veterans for more than 20 years. The Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training offers former servicemen and women a range of services designed to help them get a job, a home, and stability in all aspects of their lives. Jeffrey Kendrick joins me in the studio. He is a 20-year veteran of the Air Force. He has worked at MCVET for the past 14 years, serving as its director for the last 2 years. Mr. Kendrick, welcome, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Michael Weiss joins us as well. He served in the U.S. Air Force for nearly 4 years, and he is currently a student in the MCVET program. Mr. Weiss, good to have you as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
We'd love to hear about your experiences as a veteran or your experience as a family member or friend of a veteran. You can join our conversation by calling 410-662-8780. You can send us an email, midday@wipr.org, or you can find us on Twitter. Our handle is @MiddayTomHall. So, Mr. Kendrick, tell us about the folks that you serve. Tell us a little bit about the sort of, you know, the general makeup of the folks who are at MCVET here in Baltimore.
General makeup, maybe a apt description. The people at MCVET are just men and women, just like you and I, who have served their country through various branches of the military, who through mitigating circumstances end up homeless. Those things that bring them through the door can be a vast array of things that happened, what they encountered. But nonetheless, they come through MCVET, having served their country, end up homeless, come through the doors of MCVET, and through a intensive program of 2 years of therapeutic services received by VET, comprehensive case management, aftercare groups, drug counseling, alcohol counseling, whatever the problem happens to be, can leave in 2 years with the end goal being employment, which we hope is full-time employment, and then eventually housing.
And give us a sense. You mentioned some folks are struggling with substance abuse, some mm-hmm. mental illness and stuff. I mean, are there particular challenges that vets are encountering that people who have not served in the military tend not to encounter?
There are. Let's say during the Vietnam era, there was a thing called PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, that were encountered due to either your military service or, let's say, through battlefield trauma. Now we find that our younger veterans that come through the doors have what they call TBI, total brain injury, and what are unique to men and women who serve in the military. These things can then spiral and lead to either the addiction problem that many veterans will encounter, which then, of course, being able to, let's say, not able to hold a full-time steady employment, maybe not being totally committed to the family, can lead to the homeless case themselves and then end up out on the street.
And Mike Weiss, you were in the Air Force for about 4 years. How long have you been out of the Air Force?
I've been out of the Air Force since 91, so approximately 25 years.
Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about what your experience was when you got right after you got out of the service.
That was probably the most difficult time of my life prior to coming here, experiencing severe depression after leaving the military, because there wasn't a sense of unity that I felt in the workforce or in the environment that I was used to being into. And it was just very difficult trying to make the transition. I was always told that it was going to be difficult, but nothing could have prepared me for what I was to face.
So sometimes, I mean, as dangerous as military service obviously can be, you really missed being in the Air Force, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I truly did.
And then when you got out, what sorts of things happened to you? I mean, when Mr. Kendrick talks about the various factors that, you know, lead you to a situation where you might be homeless or whatever, what sorts of things happened to you?
Well, what happened to me, I basically fell into drug and alcohol addiction, which led to incarceration. And I've presently been incarcerated since pretty much 1998, mm-hmm. all the way
sort
up
of
to
in and out of in and out of incarceration during that time?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And how long have you been a student at McVett?
I've been a student at McVett since December 18th of last year, 2015.
So almost a year.
Yes,
yeah.
sir.
And what does that entail? What does it mean to be a student at McVett? What are you doing?
Basically, just coming in and rehabilitating, learning. It's kind of like vocational rehabilitation. You basically get set up with counseling, get back on your feet, get back on your medication or get medication if you've not been on medication. And then you become involved with the substance abuse treatment programs that they have available up at the VA. And the greatest thing that I got affiliated with was the PTSD Seek and Safety Group, and then continuing on with cognitive therapy one-on-one at the Annex, which I'm currently still involved with.
So PTSD was one of the challenges you faced when you left the service?
Yes, sir. And it masks itself in drug and alcohol addiction. And you don't quite realize what you're suffering from until you actually receive the help that I've been given since being here. And it's just been phenomenal for me. It's changed my entire mindset, I should say. And today I feel like I'm just, you know, I have hope.
Well, and congratulations to you, because it's hard work getting yourself back together, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
It's hard work, yeah. And Mr. Kendrick, you do that hard work with about how many folks at a time? What is your facility, what are they able to handle?
We're uniquely situated. We can handle 249 veterans at any one time. We find our work is usually seasonal. Usually when the weather is colder, we have more men and women who will come into the program. Currently, our census is about 175 that we currently have enrolled in the program. But it's through various phases of the program. Michael Weiss just told you he's been there for about a year. We'll have other guys who may be coming in the program today as we speak, and they'll go through various phases till they get to a point within the program where they'll be identified for employment and then finally for housing. We don't think it's as simple as just bringing a person off the street and saying, now let's go back to work. We think you should address the problems that a man or woman encountered on the streets. And you notice I did say women, because we do have women veterans who are homeless, and the number is starting to rise. And uniquely, McVett is equipped to actually handle women veterans coming into our doors.
Because this is a residential program. People come in, they live with you all for how long?
They can stay for a maximum of 2 years. But what uniquely we can do is, although we have funding from the Department of Labor and we have Department of HUD and the VA, but uniquely, if a person, let's say, after that two-year period is still not, let's say, totally on the road to recovery, still not equipped to handle full-time employment and housing, they'll stay with us even longer. We've had residents who have stayed with us in excess of 2 years.
Jeffrey Kendrick joins me in the studio. He's a 20-year veteran of the Air Force, and he is the executive director of McVET, the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. Mike Weiss joins us as well. He is a student currently enrolled in the McVET program. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. You are welcome to join us at 410-662-8780. You can drop us an email, midday@wypr.org, or send us a tweet at @MiddayTomHall. Mr. Kendrick, what is your affiliation, if there is any, with the Veterans Administration, with the VA?
We have some funding received from there, but we have an aspect of the program with the VA called grant per diem. That is where the VA will pay a veteran who comes into our doors based on their eligibility through VA benefits, and they're able to be housed with us through the various phases of our program and receive funding at the same time. And the funding entails them being able to go to aftercare groups, receive services through their medical facility, and receive case management.
And Mike Weiss, one of the things about the McVett program, as I understand it, is that it is structured from a military perspective. I mean, the military vibe at McVett is a very important dimension of the program. Did you find that that's, first of all, is that the case in your experience? And secondly, how has that, if it has been, how has it been helpful to you?
Definitely. It's been a blessing to receive the discipline that I truly lacked after so many years, and to get reacquainted with that as well. And since we've been there, it's very regimented. And we rise up early in the morning, 6 o'clock, and from that point on, there's many different tasks that we have to perform throughout the day, as far as cleaning our personal areas, cleaning the common areas that we all use. And then from that point on, we have educational services where people come in and we learn different aspects of just getting reacquainted with living life, you know, one day at a time on our own.
And, Mr. Kendrick, there's a piece of today's Baltimore Sun, coincidentally, a piece by Ian Duncan, and it tells the story of a guy in the Army, Army Specialist Scott Miller, who suffered from some mental health problems, went and sought counseling, told his counselor that he was having suicidal thoughts as well as even thoughts about doing harm to other people in his unit. And he wanted to do this to be, you know, completely candid and upfront about the thoughts he was having and the issues he was dealing with, and he finds himself then under investigation by the police. Mm-hmm. This is a tricky, nuanced, complex endeavor, isn't it?
It is. It is, absolutely. And there are many cases similar to Mr. Miller that have to be met and handled in more, let's say, a more delicate fashion. I think that we've been very fortunate that Baltimore City now has a veterans court docket where they're able to address those particular needs of a veteran, because you never can tell what's encountered through a person's military career. What was the problems they encountered during the military that may have drove them to, in this case for this gentleman, suicidal thoughts of harming himself and harming others. It all drives back to what was encountered while they were in the service, the unique factors, and I think being a veteran, speaking to other fellow veterans, they can tell you how they can truly relate to the differences of day-to-day civilian life and then being able to transition back into civilian life and just go back to a normal 9-to-5. For some of us, it's just not that simple.
Many of the folks that you're dealing with are younger. Many of the homeless veterans out on the street today tend to be the younger cohort. Why do you think that is?
That's a great question, because we have found that our demographic has changed quite a bit. You know, it's not unusual for a soldier, sailor, airman to separate from the military, a BWI, and in less than a year come back and come through our doors being homeless and needing our services. What we have found is, and unless you've been able to actually experience the effects of being in the military and battlefield trauma, it's very, very horrifying, and sometimes it can be very graphic, and those things are not like what you see in a movie where a guy all of a sudden just disassociates himself from the actual activity and is able to carry on just a normal 9-to-5 life. These things have to be addressed and actually being taken care of. And what we have found is sometimes maybe the services are not doing enough with that soldier, sailor, airman before they separate from the service to ensure that their circumstances are being settled and that person is then able to integrate back into society.
Jeffrey Kendrick is retired from the U.S. Air Force. He's the executive director of MCVET, the Maryland Center for Veterans Training and Education. Michael Weiss is also a U.S. Air Force veteran, and he is a student at MCVET. We'll have more on veterans issues when we come back after a quick break. You can join our conversation, our number 410-662-8780, our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. If you want to drop us an email, you can find us at midday@wypr.org. More on veterans when we come back after a break. Stay with us. And welcome back to Midday on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Speaking of tomorrow, I invite you to join me and WYPR's senior news analyst Fraser Smith tomorrow night, when we'll have complete coverage of the presidential election as well as all the important Senate and congressional races with NPR, and complete coverage of all the important races here in Baltimore and throughout Maryland with the WYPR news staff. They'll fan out around the state to report from the campaign headquarters of various candidates. And tomorrow afternoon here on Midday, While people are voting, we're going to talk to Dr. Joshua Sharfstein. He's the former health commissioner of Baltimore and currently the associate dean of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. They've developed a list of 100 things that have had a significant impact on public health, stuff like traffic lights or window screens. So it'll be fun to think about some of the everyday things that we take for granted that have dramatically affected, for good or for bad, our health and quality of life. Dr. Joshua Sharfstein joins me on Midday Tuesday. Today, we're talking about veterans and the challenges that many of them face when they return to civilian life. Jeffrey Kendrick is an Air Force veteran and the executive director of MCVET, the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. Michael Weiss is also an Air Force veteran. He is a student at MCVET. They join me here in the studio. By the way, there's an event tonight at the 1840 House. That's near the corner of President and Lombard Streets. It will benefit MCVET. It starts at 6 o'clock. It's a 21-gun salute to honor and remember the friends of MCVET. Proceeds will go to support the work that MCVET does. We've got information about all of that on our website, wypr.org/midday. You are welcome to join this conversation about veterans and the challenges that some of them face when they leave military service. Our telephone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Courtney, you're calling Midday from Baltimore. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me, Dan. I just wanted to comment about a program at Baltimore Cash Campaign. I am the program manager for financial security here, and we offer a free financial coaching program. And we recently partnered with the Armed Forces Services Corporation and the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to provide a special program specifically for veterans to help them achieve financial security after they've left the service. And so we have a coach on staff, a financial coach who is a military spouse. Her husband recently retired, and she's been doing has been trained as a financial coach that can work with veterans to help them achieve financial stability. So if people want to know more about that program, they can visit us at our website at baltimorecashcampaign.org, or they can give us a call at 443-692-9422. And again, this program is paid for through grant support, and so it's absolutely free to participants.
Great. Well, Courtney, thanks for your call, and thanks for letting us know about that program. You can give that information to our producer, Bridget Armstrong, and we'll put that on our website so folks can check that out. So, Mike Weiss, one of the problems that I think you've encountered and many of your fellow veterans is that if you do run into bumps in the road in your life, if you've got incarceration or you've got homelessness that you're dealing with, credit history is a really difficult thing to have, and getting credit after those experiences is difficult. Is that one of the things that MCVET has been able to help you address?
Definitely. Getting my upgrade for disability, I was at 10% service-connected, and I was able to achieve 50% service-connected disability rating today. And with that additional income, it's helped me to take care of some of the issues that I've had with credit history as far as making payments, setting up payments, and repaying my debt to society and to the people that, you know, that I've had difficulty in paying through multiple incarcerations.
Yeah. And Mr. Kendrick, in a political year, people, as I mentioned in the top of the show, they tend to sort of rally around veterans, and the politicians are always promising to do more for veterans. What's your take? I mean, because you hear anecdotal evidence or anecdotal discussion of, you know, people calling the suicide hotline at the VA and, you know, being on hold for an hour, or and other people saying that the VA has been very responsive and has been very helpful to them. What's your take on the current state of the VA? Obviously, it had its problems. It was very much in the news a year or two ago. A relatively new director, Robert McDonald, who came from the private sector. He came from business, not necessarily from the military. You're dealing with veterans every day, and they're having, like Mike Weiss, they're having interactions with the VA. What's your take on whether they're doing a better job or not?
I can honestly say there have been changes. There's still more to be done. We do know there were problems with the Veterans Administration. I can commend Secretary McDonald for the strides he has made to improve the services. I know as a retired veteran that I do sometimes utilize the services for the VA, and there is a new aspect of, if you're calling for an appointment and let's say there's a log jam of trying to be seen by a physician that the VA will then let you recommend your own civilian position that you can then, instead of waiting for that long line of trying to get through the scene at the VA, you can go to your own doctor, and of course the VA will then of course pick up the cost, which is something that was unheard of in the past.
Yeah.
So there are things being done.
And that's up and running now.
It is running now,
because
yes.
People have talked about proposing that.
That is actually being used now, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
I think it's important for folks to know what's real and what's not, because there's a lot of fuzz out there when it comes to lack of clarity about what's actually happening. It's sometimes difficult to separate the accusations from the reality. Let me ask you another question about the fact that about 45% of all veterans who are homeless are African American or Hispanic. Mm-hmm. Now they only account for about 10% of African Americans, account for the population in the service. Less than 4% of the U.S. veteran population is Hispanic, but they're heavily represented in the homeless population. What are the particular challenges that people of color face?
Much like the same challenges faced in everyday society. Those things that have been done, do you have to strive harder to make sure things are done for you in a more expeditious way? Being in the military, the military has always been projected as a colorblind society. I can honestly say that, yeah, there are some aspects of the military where you'll do see equality does work out and things are looked at in a different way. But I don't think we can honestly say that totally the military is set up in a way that nobody, regardless of your race or color, you're still going to be treated as fairly as you probably could be. But if there is a perfect utopia of an organization that works probably well without actually dictating how you advance to the military based on the color, I would definitely say it is the military. But yes, disproportionate number of African-American, Hispanic, sure there is, because once you graduated from high school, and let's say, what other aspect do you have? Can you afford to go to college? Do you have a scholarship? Whose door is always open? The military. So where would I, and I'm a perfect example of that. Where did I go? Into the military. And of course, I'm very grateful for my military service and career, college degree, a lot of other things that I got done. Could I have done that without the military? I venture to say probably not. But yeah, disproportionate number. And is life fair? Is things going to be always well for everyone as it should be? I wish I had the answer to that, but we'll continue to try to see what we can do.
And as long been reported, it's about 1% of the U.S. population fights the wars on behalf of the United States citizenry. So got to keep that in mind. Jeffrey Kendrick is the executive director of MCVET, the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. Mike Weiss is a U.S. Air Force veteran who is a student at MCVET. Let's talk to another guy from Baltimore. Ronald, you are calling, and you are a former resident of MCVET. Welcome to Midday, and thank you for your service, sir.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I'm just all really choked up. I heard the show and I had to pull over. MCVET, so I'm back in, actually in 96, it was called Maryland Homeless Veterans, and I went there. And I was in pretty bad shape, and through some funding and stuff, I was able to obtain my license back and my CDL license. And I prospered. And then, of course, I fell off, and I started to get high again. And in 2003, I was able to go back to MCVET, which was called MCVET at the time. They put me in touch with the VA hospital for some aftercare. The counseling there on site, the structure, all just got me back on my feet. And, I've been clean now for over 13 and a half years. I've actually got through MCVET, I was able to get employed through a connection and started to drive again, and I've changed jobs since then. But I mean, my life really couldn't be any better, And when I hear about MCVET, I just get choked up. It's just a phenomenal program. I was there at the beginning when the car wash started. I believe I remember Mr. Kendrick. Dr. Pierce was there. I can't speak enough about the program. And thank God that was something in place for a veteran that was just lost, and that was helped me find my way.
Well, that's great, Ronald. I appreciate the call and congratulations, and thank you for sharing that. The car wash, Mr. Kendrick, is a fundraiser that you all do.
It is a fundraiser, but if you ask the veterans in the program, they don't think it's as much fun as it probably could be. But we do a car wash. It usually starts around in March, and in fact, it just ended this last week. But a program such as ours, which has been open 21 years, our annual budget does not sometimes have enough money and leeway in it for us to do other extracurricular activities. So we use the car wash funding to be able to put on certain things that we do.
Jim in Chestertown, welcome to Midday with Mike Weiss and Jeffrey Kendrick of MCVET.
How are you?
Fine, sir. Thanks for your call.
It's a nice story. I'm a fallen vet, Vietnam, PTSD, Parkinson's, Parkinson's and Able Jack. So far, so good.
So far, so and, good. I'm glad to hear that.
So I live in Chestertown, and I was over at the outlet mall buying clothes for the veterans that I work with at Baltimore Station. And lo and behold, there's a girl sitting across the aisle from me. And I said, oh, what are you doing here? She said, I'm walking across the country for veterans with PTSD. 26 years old. The beautiful, you know, she was very positive. Veterans joining her. She's going to end up at Ocean City in a few days. What was that nice?
Good for her. Well, Jim, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. This is a woman named Angela Hatton who is walking across the country to raise awareness about PTSD. Mr. Kendrick, you have criteria that you employ to decide whether you're going to be able to work with a particular veteran who comes to your doorstep. What are those criteria? Who do you not work with?
That's a very good. Who don't we work with? It's very rare for a person not to be accepted into our program. In fact, we find that uniquely aspecting for MGVET, we'll bring a veteran in regardless of their character of service. We just recently opened up our doors now to National Guardsmen, people who are in the reservists, Coast Guard. We've had people who have done things that dictate they may not be able to receive services based on their character service, their DD-214. Sometimes we find there may be physical limitations to a person not being able to come to our program. But let me tell you uniquely what MGVET does. A person comes in to be interviewed for us, and we can't say they're not a great placement for us. They don't have the aspects of maybe furthering their education, getting employed, or putting put into housing. MGVET's goal then is to find you another program. We will never put another veteran back out on the street. So if you come through with us and you have to stay with us for a couple of days until we find just the right fit for you, we'll do that. So veteran comes in today, and we're open 24 hours a day for a person to come in for intake. But for that rare case where a veteran does not, you say, uniquely fit our program, we'll find a program for them.
And Mike Weiss, you know, your experience brings to light the difficulties that some folks have when they're reorienting to civilian life. What's your recommendation based on your own personal experience about what the VA or, the body politic can do to help veterans as they make that transition from military service to civilian life?
I recommend getting under the wing of a good mentor, somebody that's experienced, usually American Legion, VFW, or affiliated with a program such as MGVET, to get the necessary counseling and help that they need so that they can get on the right career path. My biggest challenge was not knowing how to transition from the job that I once did and how to use that in the civilian world.
And what job were you doing in the Air Force?
I was on COMNAV and radar system specialist. I worked on C-5s, and it was just high-grade electronics.
You had a security clearance?
Had a secret security clearance, yes, sir.
Yeah, knowing what you know now, how do you think you could have applied those skills in the civilian workforce?
I probably could have directly involved myself with government work and used my security clearance, which is very lucrative. That would have helped me really position myself a lot better than, you know, the career path that I did chose for myself.
Mike Weiss is a student at MGVET, the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. Jeffrey Kendrick is the executive director. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. L in Towson, welcome to Midday. Glad you could call.
Hi, thank you. I'll make this real fast because I know there's other callers. So I have a comment and then I have a question. So my comment is about Veterans Choice. I actually just went through the grueling process of dealing with them. I still feel as though it's a great idea, but there's a disconnection between the VA and Veterans Choice because the process is too convoluted to actually get someone seen in a timely manner. And the example I'm going to use is that my mother, she needed to go see a podiatrist. The appointment was 30-plus days out. Veterans Choice is set up where if the appointment is 30-plus days out, you should be able to go see a civilian doctor that's on that list.
That's what Mr. Kendrick was just talking about.
The VA appointment was, the actual VA appointment was November 15th. My mother just got seen last week at her civilian hospital, and her appointment for the VA is this Friday. So they're, you know, with the processing of the paperwork and the consultation, someone really needs to talk to them about streamlining that because it's very convoluted. And number two, I'm a single mother of a 13-year-old boy, and I'm pretty much taking on my mother because she's a project in itself. She doesn't necessarily require, like, living care or to live in a facility, but there's other parts of the McVet program that sounds like it could help her, you know, boost her self-esteem and work with her morale. Do you guys accept people who necessarily aren't homeless but just need just little cookie-cutter bits and pieces of your program?
Yeah, Mr. Kendrick.
I love that question, and it's a timely question because that is the new aspect of what we're trying to do at the program. We have found that we do not reach, let's say, everyone that would be qualified as homeless, yet there are people that need the services that we do offer, whether it be financial responsibility, in some cases how to start your own business. We have various aspects of classes that are being offered. And that is one of the new challenges that has been put forward us to as a staff. How can we open up our doors to those who are not homeless but still need to see our services? I would say that if you were to stay in touch with the organization here within the next couple of months or so, you will see a change where we'll be announcing that all of the classes that we offer Monday through Friday will be open not only to those veterans that are homeless, but for those people who just, let's say, need some of the classes that we do offer.
That's good to know. Let me try to squeeze in one more call. Lynn from Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Glad you could call.
Hi. Yeah, I'll try to be really fast. A shout out to all the veterans who have blessed our country with their bravery. And just going into the military is a brave action, just like when a lot more than when I walk into a gym.
Yeah, I think we can all agree on that, Lynn.
Right. I want to give a shout-out to Barbara Mikulski, our great senator, who I understand has done more for veterans than any other person in Congress ever. So shout-out to Barbara Mikulski, and a thank you. A shout-out to my father's battalion from World War II. I'll be honoring him this Friday. He's buried at Garrison Forest. His name was Fletcher, and he was in the Army Air Corps in the Searchlight Battalion with a group of men from Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and Baltimore, who are of German-American descent. It turns out when our family looks back at the records, but who did amazing work with searchlights from England to France to Belgium to Germany. And finally, a shout-out to my former husband, who passed away at age 49, who was served in the Israeli army through three wars. I just want to honor his memory. His name was Leon, and say that shout out to all the spouses of people who have served in the military in war and come back with demons in their minds. That was what had happened to my husband. War is a terrible thing, and we all need to recognize it as a terrible thing and look for peaceful ways to solve problems. Thank you.
No, it's well said, Lynn. Thank you so much. We are sorry for your loss, and we join you in honoring all members of your family and all the veterans who have served our country so bravely. Mike Weiss and Jeffrey Kendrick, thank you both very much for your time today. Much appreciated, and congratulations, and thank you for the very important work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Kendrick is the executive director of McVet, the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. Michael Weiss is a U.S. Air Force veteran who is a student at McVet. The event tonight at the 1840 House near the corner of President and Lombard Streets will benefit McVet. It starts at 6 o'clock. It's a 21-gun salute to honor and remember the friends of McVet. We've got information about it on our website, wypr.org/Midday. We'll have more on veterans when we come back after a quick break. We're going to touch base with a veteran who has an incredible story to tell about overcoming a life-changing injury that he suffered on the battlefield. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Stay with us. And welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. In advance of Veterans Day this Friday, we're turning our focus to veterans on today's program. I am pleased to welcome to the program Brad Snyder. He is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy, and in 2011, Lieutenant Snyder was serving in Afghanistan when an IED, an improvised explosive device, detonated, causing him to lose his sight. Suddenly blind, he turned his considerable tenacity and determination back to his longtime love of swimming. and 1 year after losing his sight, he triumphed at the 2012 London Paralympic Games, winning 2 gold medals and a silver medal, an amazing feat that he repeated in last summer's games in Rio, where he took home 3 gold medals and a silver. He was honored as Team USA's best male Paralympic athlete, and in September, he published a book called Fire in My Eyes, an American warrior's journey from being blinded on the battlefield to gold medal victory. Lieutenant Brad Snyder joins me on the phone from his home in Baltimore. Mr. Snyder, it's an honor to talk to you, sir. Thanks for your time.
Good afternoon, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here. So tell us about that day, 1 year to the day that you had this very difficult injury in Afghanistan. You find yourself standing on the podium, getting a gold medal in swimming. What was running through your mind on that occasion?
You know, on that particular day, it was really a celebration of what a community was able to accomplish. You know, from the battlefield through all the different hospitals and rehabs and then into the training environment, to my coaches, to my family, to the spectators, to my teammates, to the greater Team USA. You know, there's a lot of people who are all very involved emotionally and physically and mentally into that moment, that podium moment where they play the anthem and they raise the 50 stars and the 13 stripes higher than all the other flags in that arena. And it's just a really cool moment, a celebration of what a community was able to accomplish. And I thought and was thankful for all the people who had helped me pick up the pieces of my life after such a traumatic instance of going blind, and then allowed me to find a new avenue for, my passion, you know, and took my desire to serve into my ability to compete. And my desire to compete and win for Team USA. So it was really a remarkable moment.
And it was a remarkable moment that followed many, many other remarkable moments as well. Your injury occurred just a few months after Osama bin Laden was killed. Take us back to that time when bin Laden was found and killed, and then just a few months later, when your injury occurred, what was your frame of mind at that time?
And that's a very keen observation, and I appreciate you providing that context. It was a very interesting and incredible experience to be on deployment when that happened. And actually, I was on a mission when that happened. I was out in a different area of Afghanistan, and actually that day is the day I had rendered safe my first IED. So it was an incredible day for a lot of different reasons, and I think the prevailing sentiment of that day for me was this really strong connection to my purpose. You know, I spend a lot of time training for and preparing for and desiring and willing to get out and serve my country in the war on terror, and to be in that environment in Afghanistan with an assault team doing the things that we were doing, and then to come back from that mission to see another assault team just like ours had crossed over the border into Pakistan and had killed the former leader of Al-Qaeda and the one responsible for the abhorrent attacks of September 11th, that was just really an amazing connection to purpose. Like, I felt like, in some ways, it sounds maybe silly, but we were winning the war on terror at that particular moment in time, and I felt like I was where I was supposed to be. And that's, in some ways, what made losing my vision so difficult was not necessarily negotiating life without vision. It was more a re-identification of purpose. You know, feeling so connected to my purpose as a deployed service member with a subject matter expertise in explosive ordnance is something I'm not going to be able to do anymore without my vision. So I really had to go deep within myself to find what's my greater purpose. It's obviously not explosives anymore. What is that going to be? And I was able to find that in transitioning to athletics in the Paralympics.
You reject the term resilience. You reject the notion that when people congratulate you for bouncing back, that's a very interesting perspective, and I was very captivated by your poignant explanation of that in your book. Why do you think it's inaccurate to describe what you've done as bouncing back?
Well, it's only inaccurate because of my own perception of the word. You know, resilience and all those different. All those different things mean different things to different people, but an alternative definition of resilience was prescribed to me in a different book by a guy named Eric Greitens, where he talked about dynamic resilience versus static resilience. Static resilience being this idea that someone returns to a normal form. By saying that I bounced back, that assumes that my goal was to return to the person I used to be. But I think that anybody going through this major transition, whether you're working your way out of a career of service, retiring after 30 years, or if you've sustained an injury, which is going to force you to transition from one job to another, or maybe you just say that you're, you know, your life is taking you in a different direction, these major transitions come with a lot of different difficult circumstances, and that re-identification of purpose is one of those things. But during any of those major transitions, I don't think our goal should be to retain or bounce back or to be the person that we were before. We should understand first that we are dynamic beings and we're always different than we were the moment before. And we should strive, in fact, to become better versions of ourselves, to become more knowledgeable, to grow, to develop, to gain wisdom. And in doing so, we're always rapidly developing. I like the idea of dynamic resilience that says, dynamic resilience is accepting the scenario that you're in right now and making a decision to move forward regardless of those circumstances. So that's the condition I found myself in as far as blindness was concerned. You know, I'm not going to be able to be the person I was. I'm just not going to be able to. Nobody's going to let me near the red or the green wire to clip it and dismantle a bomb if I can't see what I'm doing. So I need to accept that circumstance for what it is and decide to move forward towards my pursuit of happiness anyway. You know, that form is going to change, but I, you know, I'm not, my goal is not to return to quote unquote normal. Does that make sense to you, Tom?
Sure, it does. I mean, but it takes enormous tenacity and determination to be able to have that perspective, it seems to me. I mean, the tendency, the impulse to feel very sorry for yourself and to sort of just, you know, go in a fetal position and give up seems to me to be a really easy impulse to fall into.
Perhaps, but I lean on, I had a lot of different things that allowed me to very rapidly accept and adopt a very positive perspective. And one of the primary things, and we're talking about Veterans Day, and this is actually maybe even more of a Memorial Day thing, but my friend Tyler Trahan was killed in 2009 by a roadside bomb in Iraq, and he didn't have the opportunity to come back at all. And in considering Tyler when I was in the hospital, it allowed me to very rapidly accept the circumstance for the positive. You know, I am still alive. I still have four limbs that work, a heart that works, a brain that works, a family that loves me, and an infinite number of opportunities to enjoy my liberty and pursue my happiness. And that's something that Tyler didn't have or doesn't have anymore, and he gave that up for me. And so I feel like it would be really selfish of me to put myself into that victim box and feel sorry for myself over my loss of vision when all of us have brothers and sisters who have laid down their lives so that we can continue on living. And I make it a mission to make the most of every moment because of Tyler's sacrifice. And that's what that has meant to me. And, you know, in many ways, the endeavors that I find myself in, whether it's Paralympic competition or sharing my story or writing it down or, you know, talking with you on the radio, you know, I'm doing this for Tyler. I'm sharing our story because I think it's important to provide that level of perspective to anybody who's faced with challenges, because there is always a way to flip it for the positive and to be thankful for what you have, versus be woeful over the things you don't have.
Brad Snyder wrote a book with Tom Cilio called Fire in My Eyes, An American Warrior's Journey from Being Blinded on the Battlefield to Gold Medal Victory. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Brad Snyder joins me on the phone. It was poignant to me to find that you and your fellow servicemen and women who've been injured on the battlefield refer to the anniversary of that injury as Alive Day. So you've now celebrated several Alive Days. In fact, it was your first Alive Day that you got your first gold medal in the London Paralympics.
Yeah, and I love the notion of an Alive Day because it very, very accurately captures the sentiment we were just talking about, turning that moment into something that's very positive. Many of us, that may be the worst day of our lives, the day we stepped on an improvised explosive device and lost our vision or lost our leg or broke our back or whatever the injury that you sustained, either in combat or in support of combat, you know, that could be looked at as the worst day of your life. But for many of us, I think we look at it as one of the best days of our life. You know, it's my alive day. I didn't have much to say about my birth. You know, we celebrate our birthday with cake and presents and parties and all that sort of stuff. But it's really, in many ways, nothing that we as individuals control. That's on our parents. But my alive day is something, a situation that I very, you know, very directly put myself into, and then it very directly came out of. And it's a day where I recognized my mortality. I stared death in the face and came out alive. I came out, you know, missing my eyesight, but I came out alive. And I came out, like I said in the previous comment, I came out with an infinite opportunity to enjoy my life, enjoy the fact that I am alive. And that's, to me, what my alive day means. And I've had the opportunity to do some really extraordinary things on my alive day. It's something I feel very fortunate for, in winning in London, and then this year representing Team USA at the opening ceremony in the Rio Games and things like that. So I feel really, you know, lucky to be alive, and even more lucky to be able to do the things that I've been able to do on my particular alive day.
We just have about 30 seconds, but I want to ask you to explain to folks what you mean by the term the delta, the place where you're transitioning from, as you said, what you used to be doing to what you're currently doing. How have you negotiated that?
Thank you so much for these great questions. It's clear you read the book, and I really appreciate that. The delta is a concept that I talk about. The source of my frustration often comes from when I compare my current situation to my former situation, i.e., washing the dishes didn't used to be a struggle for me, and now it's an immense struggle. I learned that to best mitigate my frustrations and accept my situation for what it is, I had to minimize the delta, the difference between my expectation of now and my expectation of before. You know, washing the dishes now takes me 15 minutes as opposed to 5. I just need to learn to accept that as a new reality and decide to move forward. The delta is the difference between my current expectation and my former expectation. And the more I'm able to mitigate that delta, the more I'm able to accept my current situation for what it is and make that decision to move forward.
Well, the book is an inspiration, and you, sir, are an inspiration as well, and I very much appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Tom, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to share my story, and thank you for reading my book. Thank you so much.
Retired Navy Lieutenant Brad Snyder, the Team USA Paralympic Athlete of the Year. He's won a total of 5 gold and 2 silver medals in swimming in the last 2 Paralympic Games. He wrote the new book with Tom Cilio. It's called Fire in My Eyes, An American Warrior's Journey from Being Blinded on the Battlefield to Gold Medal Victory. I want to thank the Diz today for supplying lunch. The Diz is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington. Features signature burgers, wings, steaks, and jumbo lump crab cakes. The Diz is open for lunch and dinner with breakfast served on the weekend. You can find them on the web at thedizbaltimore.com. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Dr. Joshua Sharfstein of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're going to talk about inventions that have changed the course of public health around the world over the last 100 years. A reminder that you can catch complete local and national coverage of Election Night 2016 tomorrow night right here on 88.1 WYPR. Our senior news analyst Fraser Smith joins me here in Studio A along with the WYPR news team that'll be spread around the state reporting on all the big races of particular interest to Maryland voters. That coverage starts at 8 o'clock in conjunction with NPR's coverage of the national races. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for hanging with us today on Midday. Have a great day.